I'm Frederick Gerton, and I'm the filmmaker.
And I'm Leilani Farha, and I'm the advocate.
And this is then, again, Pushback Talks. And this is like, I don't know how many seasons we've done now, but it's a lot. It's like
this is the sixth season.
I can't even pronounce that. But it's been a lot. And we started in the pandemic, forced us to meet like this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And here we go. We're still going, even though the pandemic is, well, people are pretending it's over.
Yeah, it is over. It is over. And and you, Leilani, you've been out traveling again. You were in Barcelona for the big housing summit.
That's right, the International Social Housing Festival. It was in Barcelona. It was amazing, actually. I made new friends and I met a lot of old friends that I hadn't seen since before COVID. So it was really, it was amazing. And of course, Barcelona, amazing.
It's okay. It's okay. I've been traveling a lot.
Too?
I don't know, since we met.
Yeah.
Last time we recorded, I was in Sheffield. Since then, before I was in Torino, and I've been to Capri.
Nice.
Showed a film. And then I was in the Swedish political week in Almedalen. And now I'm going to Brussels to show my new film.
For the parliament?
For the parliament, yeah. Which is cool.
Fantastic.
I'm happy for that.
Yeah.
And then I will have a little break because I feel a little bit overwhelmed.
Yes, I can imagine.
But we have an amazing guest, somebody you met in Barcelona.
Correct.
And it's Emily Marion Clancy. She is Italian-Canadian, all these Canadian roots, but born in Bologna and deputy mayor of the city of Bologna. So welcome to Pushback Talks, Emily.
Thanks. It's a real pleasure to be here. So thanks for inviting me.
So we are really curious about your work and the city's work. I was in Bologna to show Push at the amazing film festival, Biografia Film Festival, 4 years ago. And we had a cooperation with the Friends of the International Alliance of Inhabitants. It was Cesare Ottolini and his people came up and they traveled in and we had very nice debates with them. So I know that the issue of homes is also something people talk about in Italy, of course. It's a global thing, isn't it, Leilani?
It most certainly is. I, however, did not make it to Bologna, but was fascinated by what I learned from Emily in Barcelona, where we met. So really happy that you're here, Emily, and I hope you can... We have audience in many, many countries. How many countries now, Frederick?
159.
And they probably, many of them, have no idea what's happening in Italy or in Bologna. So welcome.
I can start off with, because I checked the map of Italy and the election results, the national elections in 2022, which was not a very nice outcome. So it's the color of this, the right-wing coalition is blue and the whole country was blue with very few red dots. One of them was Bologna and Genoa and some other cities, but it was like you're kind of lonely in the country in some ways. So it's a progressive city. It's a young city. You have about 380,000 people living there. It's also called a red city because of the stone, isn't there? It's a very beautiful city. So, Emily, what are your challenges as a deputy mayor responsible for housing, amongst other things? What are you up against?
So yeah, indeed, Bologna has always been a very progressive city, and it's called Bologna La Rossa, the red city, also because of its politics. For sure. So, you know, it's always a play on words between the red of that's the color of the city, of the rooftops and the color of our politics. But 2019, actually, when you were in Bologna, was an important year for housing policies in the city from a sort of bottom up point of view, because it's really a year where we started discussing the right to housing and housing as a basic human right that we needed to attend to. And this is in a context where not only in Bologna, but in general in Italy, as in other southern European countries, home and right to housing aren't really central in the political agenda, because housing is usually only conceived as being a homeowner. And about 80%, between 70 and 80% of the population are homeowners in Italy. A little less in cities. Bologna is 62%, but still that really leaves a large chunk of the population that's fighting for scraps of housing, right? That's and it's really hard for them to find affordable housing. And in 2019, I was a city councilor on the opposition back then. I have to say, just to give context, in Italy and in Bologna, we had the luxury, let's say, of being a leftist party on the opposition of a center-left democratic government. That doesn't happen at any time. And as you saw, the national outcome of the political elections, where now we're governed nationally by, like, literal neo-fascist government, you know, that wouldn't happen right now in this day and age. But at the time, one of the things that we were fighting for and advocating for was the fact that really housing wasn't central in the political agenda, and there hadn't been any investment on housing in several decades. And even our social housing, like council housing or public housing that's assigned to citizens that are most fragile, most economically or socially fragile, over the years had been sold because you needed resources to maintain the existing housing that you had in order to reassign it to new families. So all we were doing was, you know, sort of slowly eating away at our housing resources, and there hadn't been any structural investment on housing on the different levels of government, right, like city and regional and national, in quite some time. And in that year, there was a collective of associations, student associations, some leftist parties such as my own, but also unions that were working for addressing this topic, like they wanted to address it. And there's this tool of participation called Istruttoria Pubblica, which is a tool where you can get 2,000 signatures and sort of force council to discuss a topic and to express a bill on that topic. So that's what we did in 2019 on housing. And it was very interesting to me. It's interesting for me to look back at to that now, because I feel it was a turning point in the agenda on housing in the city, because it really showed people how there was already a housing crisis that was starting in our city also. And, you know, new tension and more people not able to find a house, more and more apartments that were being converted to short-term rentals. And, you know, that obviously has an impact on right to housing in our city. And I remember at the time, the deputy mayor on housing said, there really isn't a housing emergency in Bologna, kind of like, you guys don't really know what you're talking about. Instead, you know, after there was a different political setting for this new term, we ran together with the Democratic Party and the Greens and the Five Star Movement. So it was a sort of coalition, much more leftist government than before. And housing became central in this term. And why Leilani and I met in Barcelona is because I was invited to sort of present the new housing plan that our city adopted this year. It's just passed in the cabinet of the mayor with all the deputy mayors, and it's going to be in city council next week. We've presented it a couple of months ago, and in the meantime had this sort of participatory process with, you know, stakeholders and associations, student representatives, unions, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really at the final vote next week. And so I think that really brings a shift in how central housing policies were, like from nothing or almost having to force council to talk about it. And now this is the biggest housing plan Bologna has had in several decades. So
wow, that's really, really cool. Yeah. And I guess you know that you will pass it because you have the votes that you need for it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to pass. Our majority is very it's sealed on, and everybody knows, like, recognizes now how important it is to have a housing plan. And also, now we're acting on many different levels, like, this is what we're going to do in Bologna. But there's also an alliance of cities that are working together to push national government to do something on housing, because the only response that we've had from this government is on the national budget law that's passed every year, they cut the funding to subsidize rent, which was the only existing policy on housing. And it wasn't even something structural. It wasn't, you know, some years there was, some years there wasn't, to make sure they just cut it altogether. And so,
but that seems to be like the right-wing politics all over the world, that they really hate the poor, and if you can't punish them, why don't you do it? You know, so it's like, it's very sad, because some poor people also vote for them, so it's a little bit, it's a bit strange. But I mean, this kind of the, Leilani, this is something we've been talking about many times, that cities can be progressive, cities can take the fight, but then they quite often also need national governments to help out with legislation and other things.
Yeah, I'm quite interested in that relationship when you have a political party in power at the national level and its impact at the local level. And I have a bunch of questions for you, Emily, of course, about this national alliance, for example, that you're proposing, that I think is happening. Could you tell us just a little bit more, like, who's involved in the National Alliance? Are there other cities coming together, and what are the demands that you're making of national government, and has anyone been listening?
Yeah, so it just started out as really different deputy mayors that had housing, so like housing deputy mayors in different cities of Italy, and we were just like, you know, talking back and forth and exchanging policy and trying to sort of wrap our heads around how can we solve this issue in our cities. And honestly, like, I had been audited at the Senate to talk about policies, and I had made a list of points that I think were needed on housing policies, and I shared it with my deputy mayors, and then everybody, you know, pitched in and put their point of view forth, and we synthesized our proposals in sort of five strong requests that we're making to government. And at the moment, it's a good number of cities, and they're mostly big cities, but also some sort of medium size. Like, we don't want to forget smaller cities. But the cities that are working together are almost all cities that are defined ad alta tensione abitativa. So, like, there's a legal definition for cities that have a high housing tension.
Density.
Yeah, but it's particular to housing. So, like, tension on housing and, like, difficulty to find housing.
Okay.
And so most of these cities are in that sort of group, and it's Bologna, but also Florence, Milan, Naples, Padua, Parma, Rome, Turin, Verona, Bergamo. Like, there's quite a few now.
Wow.
Yeah.
And are they across the political spectrum, or do they tend to be left?
They're mostly here. We have, like, you know, what we called center left, so sort of like social democrat. Area, mostly center left. There has been some cities that have started writing to us that are on the other side, but right. So far most of the proposals are coming from center left cities for sure. That's the one thing before you were pointing out how Frederick, how in most of Italy, like, there was only a few red dots. I have to say, the administrative elections of 21, which is when we were voted in, the major cities like Milan, Naples, Rome, Florence, a couple of years before, they're all center left at the moment. So there's cities that are still left, but of course, nationally, it's gone very far right for sure. Mm. So yeah, that's something that concerns us, because as you were saying perfectly, like, they seem to hate the poor. The other big thing that's happened is they've cut il reddito di cittadinanza, which is our basic income law. Italy had only put it forth like a few years ago. We didn't have any basic income for a really long time. The Five Star Movement actually had really pushed for this, and found a coalition government with the Democratic Party, socialists, etc., left-wing Sinistra Italiana, and it went through, and then it's been taken down. So,
wow.
It's looking very... It's honestly quite frightening for the most for social justice in our country at the moment. So, trying to fight that and to be optimistic, we put together these proposals of what we need in our cities. And the idea was, okay, let's put together housing plans in our own cities to show that, like, cities are doing the max that they can. Like, because even cities were a problem for a long time. They didn't do housing policies either. It's not as much a city competence as much as it is nationally, but still, like, let's do all that we can. And this way we'll also be more credible in asking government for what we need. And basically one idea was just a law on social and public housing that sort of unifies the system, because at the moment it's divided up regionally. So there's this paradox where you can be, in Sicily or in Emilia-Romagna, which is my region, and there's different criteria in how you access public housing. So that's already very weird. And also, of course, funding on this, because again, as I was saying, many administrations in the years have sold off a lot of their social and public housing. And none was built since like the 60s or, 70s. So there really hasn't been national funding since I think the end of the 90s to sort of try and help this social housing package that you have, that administrations have. So
there is a mountain to climb, it sounds. You have to.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do.
Definitely. Definitely.
But you're still doing something now. So this plan that you're putting forward now next week, will this create some noise around in Italy, some inspiration?
Hopefully. There has been some noise about it. It also ties on to what we've been asking. For example, one thing that our city is doing, which I think is very bold and looks to the next generations, is we've been literally acquiring pieces of land that were state-owned, or, for example, there's a large area that was of the National Railway Company, and we're getting that, and we're going to build new social housing in these areas, or turning, old barracks or old military barracks into social housing. So the idea is to try and have new social housing without consuming new soil, because, of course, we have concerns about that, and we're a city that's been selected by the European Commission to reach net zero emissions by 2030. So all of the policies that we're putting in place are trying to be mindful of reducing emissions, of course. So that's something that I think is amazing, honestly. But a city can do this type of, put forth this type of investment, once every few decades, because of course it's millions and millions of euro to buy an area like that and also to build social housing. And so what we're asking is, national governments, you have so many of these unused areas like soil, but also sometimes just huge urban decadent buildings in our cities that maybe are, state-owned but haven't been used in decades. And they keep them there because they keep them in their accounting books because they have a value. I don't know how you say that in English, like bilancio. Because, maybe that building further is valued, I don't know, 50 million euro, so they can't give it away because it would show minus 50 million. I'm not sure if I'm being clear on this. Okay. But
it's a banking. It's a land banking, property banking.
But at the same time, they're not using it. Instead, if they were to assign it to cities, that would be a huge jump for housing policies, because we could convert them into public student housing, for example, or social housing. Like Bologna is a huge university city. It's the oldest university in the world. And we have 70,000 students. But public student housing, like by the university, is, 2,000 places, 2,000 spots for students. And the rest is all students living in our city. And this has always been the history of the city. And it's great to have the students inside our social fabric of the city. But it's also very hard for them to find affordable housing. And at the moment, the only student housing that's being built is very high, like high cost, highly priced luxury exactly. student housing. So that's why I think
by,
we need...
Probably by private equity firms. They own a lot of student housing across Europe and they're building it. But I read about these students who, and I really love it, and I think it's national, not just in Bologna, but they're pitching tents and sleeping in tents to what? To
raise
demonstrate,
awareness.
Yeah, to create awareness. And do you think that's having an effect?
I think so because, and I'm proud and also... happy that somehow it found the right moment because we pitched tents in 2019 before that forcing council to talk about housing period. And I'm sure maybe a couple of local articles, like, but nothing, there wasn't really wide national attention to it. Instead, students just started doing it all across the nation in their campuses, more or less in the same days, and of course that helped. And finally it was like, okay, we need to do something about housing. Like it was like a little national wake up for a little bit. So I hope this time, you know, it stays and we can push forth and use this.
It's also something that everybody's talking about. I mean, there is no student on the planet who's not talking about student housing. Of course, if you have really rich parents, you will talk about how you can get the fanciest apartment, but still it's like, but most people are suffering. Most students are suffering. I remember, Leilani, we had an episode from Istanbul, no, from Izmir. Was it from, from Turkey, where also students were sleeping outside universities in protest.
Yeah.
So this is something that happens around the world, but it's really cool that you've been able to move it. I was thinking of when you're purchasing land, public land, it's really cool because then you also grab it in front of the big money who is also marching into Italy, the big private equity firms. We often talk about Blackstone here in this show because we don't like them. But
they don't like us.
That's true. But there is an American company, you said, Leilani, Apollo coming in, that bought out Vonovia, which is also a very big German private equity firm that is invested big time here in Sweden, for example.
They didn't buy out Vonovia, but they bought out Vonovia Holdings in an area in Germany. Just they're very active on the march. I don't know if they're in Bologna, this Apollo, but I do know that they are in some of the big cities in Italy. And I mean, their track record, all private equity track record is the same, which is to raise rents, obviously, to squeeze the properties for as much extraction that they can, wealth extraction. I'm interested to know, how do you get ahead of other purchasers to purchase the land? Or do you have a right of first purchase? Or
no, I think it was just a negotiation, honestly, between... Right. The municipality, but and ongoing, like it's been going on for a long, long time, and then finally, this administration was able to be successful, and it maybe was really determined, it's just processes that go on for years, and sometimes they don't come out like they come out of nothing. There's also negotiations on other military barracks that are in our city that have been, you know, installed like for years and years. So it's also a bit of luck. Also, you know, the timing, like this time, one of the areas that we're going to develop the most and work on the most is an area where we're going to use the funding from the recovery plan, like the European recovery plan funding. So that gives us, you know, the possibility to intervene in, after having bought the area, to actually work on it. We can do so thanks to that funding. Which is important because there was really not a lot of funding for housing in the recovery plan. Like, you know, so many other things where we are, you know, we're lacking resources in Italy were considered, but housing again wasn't the priority. And so I think that's really important. And also we were talking about this in Barcelona, the same issues sometimes with the European institutions. Like, we really need them to kick in on housing a little more and make it central to the agenda, especially for things that European cities are all facing. For example, short-term rental regulation, because they're...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, the short-term, because this is like something we talked about with many mayors, from Amsterdam to Barcelona to London to on and on. So Bologna is a beautiful city, and you have a lot big influx of tourists coming by. And of course, they stay. Many opt for the short term. So, what is the effect?
Well, it's just that, like, the fact that this would be the perfect time to intervene on short term rental, because Bologna has definitely become a very more visited city in the last decade, and it's also helped during the pandemic and during the last economic crisis. It was to have occupation that was still growing in some sectors was important. But at the same time, I think the challenge is, how can we remain a progressive city where the wealth that comes in from tourism is redistributed in the city, and not to have very, low income salaries and all those, jobs that are tied to services of tourism that are often not very well paid is an issue. And just the impact of short-term rental. Like, Bologna is a city where we still have a good number of contratti a canone concordato, is contracts where the rent is fixed at a price that the unions of homeowners and people who instead rent homes get together and set a price to sort of bring the market down. And up to 2016, we used to have 32,000 of these contracts per year. So that's obviously a good number, because it brings down, the price of rent in the city. And you have at least a number where the rent is fixed in some parameters. But in the last, from 2016 to now, so, 6-7 years, that number has gone down to 25,000. So not alarming, but still, we've lost, 6,500 contracts. And in the same years, in that same span, apartments on inside Airbnb, for example, went up from 800 to 4,000. So it's almost, the parallel is almost perfect, right?
You can see it's coming, yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing is, what we need, and that's one of the proposals that I'm putting forth with the other deputy mayors on housing and with the other cities, is a short-term rental regulation. And why I say we need this is because, unfortunately, unlike Amsterdam or other cities, we can't tackle this on our own. Due to Italian legislation, we need national parliament to put forth the law and then give cities the tools to regulate it. And there is a proposal from this collective, you guys should check them out, they're amazing, called Alta Tensione Abitativa. They're a collective of urban planners, architects, lawmakers, social scientists. There's a bit of everything. And they started working together in Venice, where, of course, the tourism situation is completely out of control. And they drafted a bill on giving cities the possibility to regulate short-term rentals. And it's really interesting, because it gives you, first of all, it says one home, one host. So we don't want, people who have hundreds of apartments or intermediaries who manage hundreds of apartments on a platform that's thought for home sharing. That's not fair. So off the market. That's number one, and very important. Number two, they really push on zoning, which I think is very interesting in cities where the phenomenon hasn't exploded yet, because you can say, okay, maybe here, for example, in Bologna, in the city center, there's both the pressure from tourism and the student population, because most of the universities are in the city center because it's the historic university setting. So maybe here we won't give licenses for Airbnb and Booking and all the short-term rental platforms anymore, but because, we've reached our cap. But, in this other neighborhood that's actually less, touristy and doesn't have any tourism at all, it might even be useful for me to, bring back to that area of the city and have people visit that area and get to know it. So it really gives you a bit of control on the phenomenon in your city, and it works on, again, you know, zoning and giving a license that lasts for 5 years, and also the idea of rotating those licenses. So maybe, you know, tomorrow Emily Clancy gets the license for 5 years, and then I'll take it away, and in 5 years I'll give it to someone else, because, again, that's also redistributing the power of short-term rentals.
It's really cool, and it's...
Yeah.
I guess somebody will label you as a left-wing extremist, but it doesn't really sound so extreme, does it? It sounds like, okay, why are not everybody doing like this, Leilani? Is it like?
I think I'm so inspired in this podcast, honestly, Emily. So many of the things that you have brought up, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I need to get you in front of other cities to talk about what's possible. You in Bologna, you're looking at what's possible, not what's not possible. It's so refreshing. And one of the things that I have been saying to cities is, if you get your act, especially cities that are so affected by national government, so if you get your act together, which is exactly what you're suggesting Bologna is doing in other cities, by developing your own strategies, then you're in a stronger position to say, look, we're doing our part. We're trying to realize the right to housing. And now, national government, it's your turn. And of course, the EU, the European Parliament, has an important role to play in pressuring the national governments. We've had on our show before a member of European Parliament.
Kim van Sparentak.
That's right.
Yeah, and from the Netherlands, yeah.
Yeah, from the Greens, from the Netherlands. And she is working on, I'm sure you know her, Emily, she's working on some regulations around Airbnb, what we were just talking about. So I'm really hoping that you can help inform that process, because I think some of the ideas you were just talking about and this group is pushing for are very progressive. And I haven't heard some of these ideas before. Really so interesting. I like the use of zoning. And as you say, these 5 years increments and passing them around. It's a more cooperative idea of how to still generate resources for a city through tourism, because it is important for cities to have some resources from tourism, but for that not to be extractive and exploitive. So
exactly.
That's also for, I mean, we'll say, as a, you know, if you go to some cities right now, Lisbon or central Barcelona, the touristification has killed the cities, you know. And it's, I mean, I talked to a restaurant owner in Alfama in Lisbon, and he said 5 years ago we were 250 families on the street. Now there are only four left, you know. Everybody is out.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, that's exactly why I'm really frustrated at the process of why, you know, the national government at the moment obviously is completely ignoring this proposal. Actually, they've called us to see the new draft of the proposal on short-term rentals. And at the moment, the only idea that they're putting forth is a minimum stay of 2 nights. So the only difference is, you know, if you're coming to Bologna and you want to stay only 1 night, you will have to go to a hotel and not short-term rental. So it's really only a favor to hotel owners, I guess. I don't know. It has no impact on housing whatsoever.
No.
Not even in Paris, where they can only have the apartment out for 9 months in the regulations. Most people let then these apartments stay empty for 4 months, because there's still more money in these 9 months of rental. So it's tricky.
Of course, but that's the thing. Like, it's a really tricky issue. But we're at the time in many cities, you know, not Venice for sure. They're too far out, unfortunately. But there's many cities in Italy at the moment where if you intervene right now, like, this is the moment to act, you would probably not stop tourism, but sort of hold it at a reasonable level for the city. And that still allows you to grant right to housing. Like, my concern is Bologna is one of the few cities in Italy that's still rising in terms of population. It's still very attractive. Unemployment is under 3%. Like, it's a city where a lot of people move to work or to study. But there is many, especially in these last couple of years, of students or workers who are saying, I'm trying to come to Bologna, but I can't find a house. So then I'll go somewhere else. And that's, you know, deadly and detrimental for a city, because really we're losing opportunities just because of the fact that we can't allow right to housing. So that's unfair. Mm.
I was thinking, but when I know you were going to be on the show about the floodings you had in Bologna this spring. It was really, really heavy. Yeah. And you are also environmental mayor. I understand your portfolio includes the climate issues. So that must have been a drama also.
Yeah, I think I have part of the environment. I think one of the best choices of our mayor, Matteo Lepore, was to sort of take climate and divide it up in a lot of deputy mayors, because it's something that we have to think of together as a team. And he didn't want to just have one environment person anymore. So Annalisa Boni is the deputy mayor who has like the actual transition and coordinates that mission I was talking about, the 100 smart, clean, climate neutral cities by 2030. But I have the climate office and I have climate assembly, which is really interesting because it's something that again comes from bottom up movements. The movement Extinction Rebellion, which I'm sure you know, right, asked us to declare climate emergency a few years ago, and they asked us to create a climate assembly, a citizen assembly, and we did. So we have this assembly that just started actually last month, where there's 100 citizens that are randomly selected, divided by genre, area of the city where they live in. Divided by gender, not genre, area of the city where they're residents or not residents, because we also have student and migrant population, et cetera, et cetera. And they're working together with experts to find some proposals for a city council on climate, and they get paid to do so. And I think these two things are so important because so many times when there's climate change policies, we only think of what the already privileged can do, you know, like switch to an electric car. Well, that's not feasible for everybody, you know. No. So we really need the point of view of the most disenfranchised people that are usually people who don't participate even in participatory processes. Instead, now we're randomly selecting them, right? So finding out points of view that maybe we would have never had otherwise. So I think that's really...
My new film, Breaking Social, puts the question, can we afford a rich? and we know that the rich are the ones who spend most climate. I mean, they are the big spenders of everything. So I saw that, like, what's it, 125 richest people on the planet spend more...
Have a bigger carbon footprint.
Yeah. Footprint for sure. than the whole of France. So 125 people spends more than the whole of France.
Wow.
So it's like...
It's crazy.
It's Oxfam's number, so it's not me inventing it.
And then
it,
the
so.
Impacts are on the most vulnerable people, the most disadvantaged, you know, people in homelessness, people who are poor,
etc. The poorer you are, the less carbon footprint you
have. The less yeah. carbon footprint and the more impact you feel of climate change.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so unfair.
So, but it's good that you're doing this. And so the flooding this spring, how did it affect you? Did it?
So, and Bologna wasn't one of the most hardly hit. Like, there's cities in the Romagna part of Emilia-Romagna region where literally like the entire center of the city was underwater by several feet. So, of course, we feel lucky compared to that. But still, there was a lot of property damaged, and there's roads, like hundreds of roads that are damaged and inaccessible at the moment. And so we're definitely going to need resources to recover from this. And but I think it's good, and it's hopefully a wake-up call in policymaking also. Like, I think even the center-left governments have never been bold enough, you know, on climate change. So hopefully it's something where, the climate justice movements have really been raising their voice on this. And even though sometimes, you know, it attacks even the administration that I'm part of, and it concerns me because I think, wow, you know, far right would do so much worse. So let's be careful in attacking center left governments. But I do think it's really good for the attention to be on how we need to build differently now and how we need to build less and not consume new soil and, you know, think of desoiling areas and building forests instead of, you know, just new buildings. And there's a lot of different actions that we're putting together. We're bringing back the tram after 40 years that it hadn't been in the city, like it had been taken down, as many cities are going back, you know, with the, in terms of mobility policies, thinking about, of course, how can we be more effective and reduce our carbon footprints in public transport. So there's a lot moving on in that direction too. And so I think anything that gives the nation a wake-up call, of course, you know, not, I don't want to not think of the tragedy that it was on some families that were heavily impacted by this. But in general, just in terms of policy and in terms of the window of opportunity that sometimes comes around, I hope that it can generate a positive outcome.
Mm. Belani, I'm really happy for this episode, and it's so nice to have you with us, Emily.
Thanks.
Italy is amazing. I mean, you have this actually neo-fascist prime minister. I mean, truly, it's not only a label that we are throwing out. It's like almost that's something she's proud of. But it's also a country of movements. Mm-hmm. And movements that are all the time pushing and doing things. And it's like constant pressure from the movements. There's a lot of people who actually work a lot to change things in Italy. And I think it's really inspiring. It is really inspiring.
Me too. Me too. I, when I heard Emily speak in Barcelona, I knew we must have her on Pushback Talks. I'm so pleased you joined us. No, really. It's because, you know, in my work, I'm always looking like, where are the good examples? Who's doing cool stuff? Who understands the human right to housing in a way that's practical and realistic and is moving it forward on the ground? And that's certainly what you provided us here. I actually think it's one of the best models at city level. What you've told me, everything fits right within the human rights framework and is really just doing the human rights framework. Especially I love this people's assembly that you were talking about and picking people randomly so that you're hearing voices you would never normally hear, because that's how we'll make change, is when we start hearing from the people who are suffering the problems. They often know how to solve those problems, or at least how to help us diagnose the problem better. So I'm really so impressed with your work. Thank you.
And it's also the cool thing with the podcast is if we can spread inspiration, you know, if we can send inspiration on. As we said, we have listeners in 159 countries. Of course, there are not many people in every country, but many of our listeners are active people. So, So this is really cool.
I think some of the social movements in Bologna wouldn't agree with you, because, of course, they always see like people who maybe come from movements and go into institutional politics as like the enemy.
Selling out. Yeah.
But I do think that we need more municipalists in politics and more, you know, like radical thinking in the institutions. Like, I really don't think that we should, movements are crucial to politics. And you said perfectly, like, they really have a great role in Italy. But I do think we have to not leave the institutions to, you know, neoliberals. And that's it.
Absolutely.
No. You need, I mean, democracy also needs some kind of representative system, and so you have to run for elections. You have to be there. Otherwise, you can't change the laws. And you can sit and be angry by yourself. But that's in the end also boring. You need to move someone with your movement, and then so that you're in there. It's actually quite good. I would say. Leilani, do you have any final things to Emily, or should we send her off too? Because
she's a busy woman, and we should probably let her go and do her work. The relationship between climate and housing, those are the big issues of the day, and you're in the middle of both of them, Emily. So Yeah, I hope we stay in touch. I'm hoping the shift can connect with you after the podcast.
Also, I hope you can watch my film Push, but I could also send you my new film, because you should actually do something with that in Bologna, because it's inspirational, I think, for people who are politically active.
Sure.
And we now also have an Italian version of the film, so it's
amazing. Yeah, send both.
I will. So, Emily, thank you very much for being on Pushback Talks.
Thank you. It was honestly a pleasure, and I love talking about housing anytime, so whenever.
Great. And I was serious. I want the shift. We are going to connect with you in some way, shape, or form, bring you into some of our work somehow. I don't know. Feature you.
Yeah.
I don't know, cool. But I'll be in touch.
And the podcast will be out quite soon, so we will also... I don't know if we have your handles on Twitter. I don't know where are you communicating on Twitter or?
Yeah. Less since it's owned by Elon Musk, but
yes.
But no, it's still the place to be for international things. So for
yeah, sure. I know. So, we will. It will be out. So please share it also with.
I will, of course.
With your friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. So she was amazing. I was
fantastic.
Thank you for bringing her on. I mean, so you're out networking in the housing world again, and you find some really interesting, inspirational people. It's cool.
That's the way to do it, isn't it? You hear someone speak, and you think, oh, we need them on Pushback Talks, and it all works out. So there you go.
That's good. Yeah. So it can also happen to our listeners. If you find somebody who is really inspirational, tell us so we might be able to include them.
Yeah. So there, Frederick, I think we've done it.
This is like the last episode for this season, season 6.
Correct.
Last episode.
We made it. Phew.
We made it. You're on your way to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
All the way down under.
All the way
down
under.
I know your husband is from there, so you have to go there and visit families and stuff.
And my children are half Australian. They're Australian citizens.
Oh, my God. So they can always escape when Canada, the ice storms are taking over you.
Exactly.
They can go down to the extreme heat.
Yeah.
So, good. From now on, we will do a summer series, send out some of our favorite episodes from before, and we will polish them up a little bit. Tell your friends about Pushback Talks. We can host more listeners. There are space for more ears out there. So you're welcome to share it and look out for Push the Film or for my new film Breaking Social, which is now the first theatrical release will be in Sweden now in August.
Great.
And then on it's Germany, Netherlands, Belgium,
European
Canada.
Sweep. Oh, Canada.
Also Canada. Canada will be probably October, we think. Look out for
Let
it.
Let me know.
Yeah.
We're here. We're here.
You will have to host a screening.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. And have a great summer, my friend.
You too, Frederick.
Bye.
Pushback Talks is produced by WG Film. To support the podcast, become a patron by going to patreon.com/pushbacktalks. Follow us on social media at @make_theshift and @push_the_film. Or check out our websites, maketheshift.org, pushthefilm.com, or breakingsocialfilm.com.